to our podcast with Dave Cooper.
This session is going to be the first of several, I believe, about the codependent idea, the reverse addict, as I call it. And I did promise that I would do several more based on some of the generalities I spoke about in the first in this series. And so I want to first of all take really the biggest idea and spend some more time talking about that. And it's the first thing I mentioned on the first of the series, which is the idea of why is it reversed? What's the big reversed idea? And I said in the first session that so many things were reversed in the codependent or the reverse addict. And I said I would go into more detail. Nobody said this better, I don't think, than the Victorian novelist, Charles Kingsley. He wrote a very famous book, famous at the time, called The Water Babies, where he came out with this concept, I believe, copied many times, where he says, don't you know that a gamekeeper is just a poacher turned inside out? And I think this really captures the idea of the codependent. It's saying that a codependent is essentially an addict turned inside out. They're the addict, but in a reverse sense. So I already mentioned the idea that of a definition of saying something like the codependent is a unique form of addiction where you're actually addicted to addiction. And interestingly, it's one of the very few forms that I know of where the object of your addiction is actually alive. You're addicted to somebody who's alive, who's an addict. And why would this be? Why would somebody need or find somebody who's so narcissistic, so overtly controlling, self-centered, egotistical, and so on and such, you know, such a disaster in so many ways. Why would that be attractive? Well, there's a very good reason. I want to go into detail about that today. And it's this. When you come across someone who always wants to be at the center of everything. Now, don't get me wrong, when we're talking about the narcissist, of course they don't want to be the center of attention. That's a different thing. You know, the limelighting, wanting to be in the spotlight, that's a different thing. That's your egotistical type. The narcissist doesn't want to be there and will probably feel acutely uncomfortable in the spotlight, but that's not the same thing. We're talking about something slightly deeper in the narcissist where they want to be the center of everyone's thoughts. In other words, everything that's done, they want to be done for them. And the reason for this, and again, I don't want to get too far off beam here, but the reason for this, and you'll see this on some of the other podcasts where I go into more detail on it, the reason is that their identity is largely constructed through the reflection or the reflective opinion of others. So if you're not, in a very real sort of sense, if everyone surrounding the addict isn't thinking about them, or more accurately, reflecting to them what they think about them, then the addict essentially disappears. They don't really exist except in the reflective value of others. And so very important to understand that's what they want to be at the center of, so as to continue to exist through appearance. It's not about being the center of attention as such. Now, how does this then relate to the codependent? Well, very, very accurately. In other words, the attraction is very intense because what the addict wants fits so perfectly with what the reverse addict wants. To the extent that the addict wants to be at the center of everybody's thoughts, the reverse addict wants no part of that. The reverse addict wants to be in nobody's thoughts ever. They don't want to be thought about. They don't want to have everyone have an opinion about them. They don't want anyone. They don't want to cause a ripple. They don't want to do anything that brings attention to themselves. And what better way to hide in plain view than to simply stand behind someone who wants all the time and spends all their energy in trying to get to the center of everybody's thoughts and everybody's motivation. So you can see how this works. I think I've given some sort of a picture there that will be quite shocking to some who have not considered it. I understand that people will be listening to this who have not considered these ideas before, but if you are a reverse addict, you will recognize yourself immediately in this, and it may be acutely uncomfortable. But basically, what you're doing is you're literally hiding behind the narcissistic nature of another. And at the same time as it's frustrating, it also fits so well. So how does this fit with the idea of the relationship with the addict? Well, whereas the addict only exists, as it were, in the reflected values and opinions of the other, the reverse addict effectively only exists in the caring of another, or in the value they have to another. They don't particularly exist in their own right. I'm talking about in their own mentality now, that they don't exist in their own right. It's only when the value is reflected in the dependence of the other, which is part of the reason why they call co-dependence. It's the value they have to the other, whereas for the addict, it's the reflected opinion of the other. Now, I don't know if you can start to see how well those two things fit together, but talk about hand in glove, it's perfect. And like any other form of addiction, if it carried on working, they'd never come into therapy, they'd never stop doing what they're doing, because it fits perfectly. And if it carried on going, well, it would still be perfect. Why does it not carry on going? And I think this is where a lot of people who are listening to this, this is where you'll be. You'll be in that place where it's just not working anymore. You're so sick of it. You're so frustrated with it all. And of course, I'm speaking to people who are in that position generally. And so what happens? Well, I don't have to tell you, if you're in that position, what's been going on. You've had years of it by now. It could have been violent at times. It certainly will have been abusive most of the time. The novelty that was the behavior has now become a tragedy and a crisis. Whereas they were maybe a bit irresponsible around money, now they've done some disastrous things with money. Whereas it used to be sort of funny and coy to sort of tell your friends about how, you know, badly they treat you, now it becomes a tragedy that you're trying to hide. They will have got you to lie for them on many, many occasions around work or around friends or around how they've abused you or something like this. They may have had affairs. They may have at times so blatantly shown their disregard for you that whereas in some ways, of course, it was helping your self-esteem because you could hide, now you can't hide anymore because they're kind of pointing you out and making you feel worse about yourself. Well, I don't have to go on. There are so many ways in which this has now become for you something that you need to deal with. Or it could be that you've not got to that stage yet, but you're still at the stage where you want your partner to be dealt with. You say, well, you know, we're fine, but they need to stop gambling, or they need to stop using drugs, or they need to stop womanizing, or whatever it is they're doing. Unfortunately, this is not the case. The level of challenge to yourself has to be the equivalent or the same as the level of challenge to your partner. So what does that mean for you? Well, it means that you've got to start looking at and digesting your own truth. And that means, what is it like? What does it feel like for me to be on my own? What does it feel like when I'm not getting a sense of value and a sense of worth from the way that I selflessly look after someone else and the way that I'm put down and abused by them? What happens when my sense of worth has to come from somewhere else? Well, largely what happens, you'll know this better than me, it comes from a terrible, terrible place. The way your self-worth plummets when you're no longer being reflected in the value you have to someone else is literally shocking to see, and it will be shocking for you to feel. And I do sympathize tremendously with this. And so when you think of the level of challenge that would be to you to really deal with that and to really go for the long term strategy of doing your own therapy with this, at least then you can see what sort of level of challenge this is to your partner, because that's the kind of level we're talking about. We're talking about a full recovery, which is to literally be born again as a new person, to be a recovered self in exactly the same way that the addict has got to be a recovered self, that you can mourn and grieve your addicted self and look back on them as somebody who has now gone and is lost to you, and that you miss in some ways. This is exactly the same as it is to the addict, and the level of challenge is the same. So I don't know if I've maybe said enough there, and given you some things to think about. The actual treatment and the therapy for this, of course, is something we must talk about in a different way. I do urge you to contact me if this approach appears to work for you, or it's something you'd be more interested in. Send me an email or ring on the number that we've supplied if you feel that this can benefit you. We'll talk then about what we can do together. The level of treatment I offer is always personal and always committed. So we need to talk about what we can do and how we can do it. If you're in another country to myself, it makes no difference. I work largely on Skype or the phone. So if you feel that this approach might benefit you, do get in touch and we'll talk more. Until then, bye for now.
The A2R Podcast with Dave Cooper.